Peter Carter and Elizabeth Woodworth are calling out criminals in high places.
All of the governments are subsidizing fossil fuels to an enormous amount. I mean, we're talking trillions of dollars a year of fossil fuel subsidies. That is the people's tax money in order to destroy the people's future.
They are co-authors of Unprecedented Crime, Climate Science Denial, and Game Changers for Survival.
Go vegan, and after a little while, you're going to like it, and you're going to help the planet a whole lot. But also, get your banker or whoever you use to look into what your investments are, no matter how small, and tell that person to get everything that's involved in fossil fuels out. And to start putting as much as you can into renewable energy.
Peter Carter is next on Progressive Spirit. Stay with us. You're listening to the podcast version of Progressive Spirit. If you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Podomatic, TuneIn, or whatever podcast app you use to listen, and give Progressive Spirit 5 stars, won't you? Contact me through progressivespirit.net with your thoughts and ideas about the show, and be sure to share this podcast on your social media. Follow on Facebook and Twitter. The website, again, is progressivespirit.net. For the Pacifica Radio Network and the Public Radio Exchange, and from the studios of KBOO in Portland, Oregon, this is Progressive Spirit. ProgressiveSpirit.net. I'm John Shuck.
Tragically, the future for today's children is grim. The planet has already been substantially changed.
Peter Carter is founder of the Climate Emergency Institute. He, along with Elizabeth Woodworth, have written Unprecedented Crime, Climate Science Denial, and Game Changers for Survival. They pull no punches in demonstrating that fossil fuel companies and the banks that fund them are criminals who need to be in jail today for destroying our planet and our future. Is it too late to take back Earth?
But I say I'm well aware from history that human beings, when they get together on a common cause, can really, really make miracles happen.
Dr. Peter Carter is founder of the Climate Emergency Institute. He served as an expert reviewer for the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change's 5th Climate Change Assessment in 2014. He has also presented on the implications of global climate change on food security for the world's most vulnerable regions and populations at science and policy conferences in Canada, the United States, Europe, Asia, and South America. From Victoria, British Columbia, welcome, Peter Carter, to Progressive Spirit.
Thank you very much, John.
This book goes right after it, Unprecedented Crime. Can you tell me a little bit about the setup of your book and how you happen to write this book now?
Yes, I'm a climate expert in my retirement. My background has been environmental health protection policy. And that involves regulatory, legal and quasi-legal processes. And I've naturally turned over the years more and more and more to what I call the issue of all issues of all time, which is global climate change. Actually, it's global climate disruption and ocean disruption, because the ocean emergency situation that we have is just as great, in fact, as the climate emergency, which is, of course, is continuous atmospheric greenhouse gas pollution. So it was a natural for me to want to publish a book that documented the science, but also showed that the science was a overwhelming proof that we are in a most terrible criminal situation, which doesn't take very long for people to realize, you know, particularly with the most unfortunate political situation in the United States, you know, with the Trump administration, Republican administration, and Republican-dominated houses, both of which are, I call them dangerous climate change deniers now, because they've sort of moved a little bit to their saying, well, maybe climate change, you know, is real, but it's not dangerous. We don't have to do anything about it. We can just continue to produce fossil fuels to the max. Now, that's just not the United States. You know, I mean, you can apply that to actually all of the industrialized and rapid industrializing nations. Now, because of the inevitable, unquestionable effects of continually rising atmospheric greenhouse gas pollution, this is a horrendous crime. And various people have, you know, written some op-eds, and there are some professors of ethics and Western morality, and they have written about the crime. So we're certainly not the first people to say that there's a crime. One of the big climate change heroes, of course, who's well known, James Hansen, said in a public statement that he made in 2008 that it wouldn't be too long before the CEOs of the fossil fuel industries, it would be recognized that they had been committing a crime. So with the absolutely unbelievable degree of, which is what I present on, what I go to conferences on not just the extent, but the rate of increasing atmospheric greenhouse gas pollution. I was fortunate enough, through sort of mutual climate change interest, to meet Elizabeth Woodworth. And that was very fortunate because she lives close to me in Victoria. And also, she has been one of those sort of rarely responsible individuals, I think I'd have to say, who has followed in depth over many years the ongoing climate change, as I say, deteriorating situation. And she, in fact, has been the most of the United Nations climate conferences. And so it was a good partnership, and we were able to write this book. And in actual fact, we were very lucky to get James Hansen himself write a foreword to the book.
Let's lay out the situation. Your first chapter is called Extreme Weather Around the World. Lay it out for us. How bad is it? How serious is it? What are we facing currently, and what are we facing, say, in 50 years when my little granddaughter will be my age?
That depends, of course, on whether governments decide to actually do anything about this. Governments are doing worse than nothing. You know, they're coming out with some pretty words and speeches. That is outside the United States, I guess. But they're still not doing a damn thing about getting emissions rapidly into decline. Emissions last year were at all-time record high. And, of course, most of this is the carbon dioxide effect, and most of that is from fossil fuels. And the trouble with carbon dioxide is that it's highly persistent in the atmosphere, and therefore it accumulates. It doesn't just stay there. It builds up all the time that emissions are being emitted at all. Tragically, the future for today's children is grim. The planet has already been substantially changed. It's not you and me. It's not us that's doing this, right? It's the economy which has been developed, which is now so powerful, and you know, sort of doesn't act with a mind or a spirit of its own at all. Okay, there's no ethics or common sense driving the market, right? You know, it just responds. Then it's not just the fossil fuel corporations that are driving the world into not only continuing to emit, but higher and higher and worse kind of emissions. You know, in Canada, we have the tar sands, for instance. Because the big banks are in a deadly partnership with the big fossil fuel corporations, and they are financing the corporations to do now what is now absolutely destroying the planet. fossil fuel emissions accumulating in the atmosphere, causing ocean acidification, ocean warming, deoxygenation, and of course the extreme weather events, which I'm glad you mentioned, because you know, the extreme weather events are so dramatic, and they're increasing so obviously, you know, that for anybody to deny there is dangerous climate change going on, we know that they're not just deniers, that they're liars. You know, we're looking at what would sort of be called an unspeakable evil right now, because you know, in terms of spirituality, we had the wonderful Pope Francis's his letter, Our Common Home, in which he makes it quite clear that this is a great wrong. And a few months after he published that, he made a statement that changing the climate is a sin. These dark forces in our society who are not changing, they could change, right? The perverse economics could be changed very readily. All of the governments are subsidizing fossil fuels to an enormous amount. I mean, we're talking trillions of dollars a year of fossil fuel subsidies, that is the people's tax money, in order to destroy the people's future. Because it's a tough question to answer now about today's children, but the facts are overwhelming, and they're frightening. People should be frightened of this, and they should be responding, you know, to that. They should be fearing for their children. And everybody of my age, you know, should be working actively to oppose this horrendous situation.
This is Progressive Spirit. I'm John Chuck. I'm speaking with Peter Carter. Dr. Carter is the director of the Climate Emergency Institute, and he, along with Elizabeth Woodworth, have written Unprecedented Crime, Climate Science Denial, and Game Changers for Survival. Chapter 2, you begin by saying the denial of climate change science by corporations and by the institutions that govern and inform society is the worst ever crime against humanity. Let's discuss these crimes against humanity. Who are these criminals? And this isn't just misinformation. You talk about it being disinformation. Can you make the distinction between those two and make the case?
Going back many years, from 1989 to be precise, the big global energy corporations combined to attack the scientific reality of global climate change. They formed several sort of organizations. One is called the Global Warming Coalition. They formed and used several highly funded think tanks. So we know all that story. The story comes from fossil fuel corporate money, right? This is a premeditated, and you'd have to say conspiratorial crime, okay, against the health and the survival of huge populations, and now we're looking at an existential threat against the future of all humanity. Now, of course, in my health policy work, years and years and years and years ago, we were working hard on getting regulations on air pollution, which, of course, is primarily fossil fuel air pollution. In North America, we did make considerable progress, actually. We developed a very good risk assessment process, regulatory process, public stakeholders. It was really quite a success of how the air pollution in America and also in Europe, of course, improved. But now, of course, all the manufacturing has been sort of exported to mainly China. And so we still have the sort of Victorian age air pollution coming out of the Chinese manufacturing base. So that's a crime. We have millions of people every year being caused by fossil fuel air pollution. And we and the fossil fuel corporations have known about this for decades. Leukemias increase, especially amongst children. Obviously, asthma, chronic lung disease, Also, a number of cancers. There's been a huge amount of research ongoing for decades, and as the research has progressed, not only have we found that the link with fossil fuel air pollution, toxic pollution, was more and more definite, we were pretty surprised to find that there were far more severe degenerative diseases linked to that toxic air pollution than we guessed. The first big one was when experts in the United States, in fact, started publishing the evidence that air pollution was greatly increasing the risk of circulatory diseases, including cardiac disorders, and then including stroke. Another surprise was the experts discovered that air pollution was also increasing diabetes. And not only increasing diabetes, but bringing in a very terrible new kind of diabetes, which is called a toddler diabetes. We've had these in our medical public health research. We've had these terrible shocks, which, of course, we've communicated to the government and the corporations obviously know well about. We also have now strong evidence on this fossil fuel air pollution causing chronic degenerative diseases. In other words, driving up the risk of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. This book is about climate change, but if you're talking about the fossil fuel industry, right, who are the villains? There's absolutely no question. It's on record. It's the fossil fuel corporations and their big funders, the banks. And they do not have to be doing this at all. They can switch, which is what we talk about in the book, because the science says we can't just reduce fossil fuel emissions. We have to get CO2 emissions down to near zero. So that obviously, of course, means conversion, not improvement. It means conversion. Big corporations and the banks know, because, as I say, legal cases are now being brought against them. They know they can make this switch. I'm sort of proof positive of one example, because over many, many years, rather slowly, I've been switching my retirement investments into renewable energy investments. So all of my investments I have now are in renewable energy. And they're doing very well, thank you. There's no excuse for this. The banks, the investment corporations, the energy corporations can, obviously they're ideal, to make this switch. We need to make a switch to non-combustion. The burning age is over, or we are. We need to make this switch to non-combustion energy, and it's ridiculously simple to do.
Okay, so we can do it. The banks can do it. We have the technology to make the switches. The energy companies could redesign their plants. Things could happen in this way. And yet the choice seems still to be made to rather just cast doubt on the science itself. I watched a YouTube video of you. And in this video, I looked at the comments, 250 comments or so. And here's where some of them, what they were. Global warming is good because we're in an ice age. CO2 is good for crops. Now, this, I don't think that the people who made those comments just made them up, that they're just individuals. I don't know. I don't have proof. But my suspicion is that they are repeating dogma and doubt and junk that is comes from the merchants of doubt, shall we say.
Yeah, no, there's no question about this. When I first started years ago, realizing that I'd have to try my hand at making YouTubes, you know. And I soon noticed that as soon as I'd put one up, literally within a minute, there would be a denier there, you know. And to begin with, obviously, this upset me a bit. As it happened routinely, I thought, well, what the heck, you know, I'm just going to continue putting my YouTubes out. Well, imagine my surprise when a few years later, I looked at my YouTube and I realized, oh my God, I can redo those. I'm much better at making YouTubes now. I'm gonna take those and just remake them, refine them, and put them out again. So I did that. And do you know, when I put them out again, exactly the same thing happened. This was the same YouTube with the same name. Some of them are nasty. Some of them I would have to call maliciously clever. They'll say, well, for heaven's sake, don't you know that Dr. blah, 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 said blah, 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 right? Well, when I checked, there was no Dr. Blank, and no blank was ever said by anybody. This was maliciously clever because it sounded on an equal footing to myself, okay, if not sort of more authoritative. And who's going to check that apart from me? Nobody. So anybody who reads that kind of maliciously clever comment, they're going to be taken in. I'm absolutely amazed, and I'm still totally amazed. I've ceased trying to understand it, because as the evidence has got stronger and stronger and stronger, this activity using, you know, the social media to confuse the public and to make, of course, absolute outright lies, you know, I mean, we're in an ice age, excuse me, but, you know, they know that this kind of very quick media is effective, right? The only thing we can do to fight this is just to keep on repeating and explaining. I don't think we've explained to the public that well. My colleagues generally agree, you know, that the scientists, after all, and we're not trained as public communicators, so that's something we have to live with. We do have, and this makes this denial even more absolutely unbelievable, we do, of course, have the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. I'm an expert reviewer of the IPCC. And the drawbacks to the IPCC, everybody knows their assessments, their every few year assessments tend to be underestimates, understated. There's a reason for that. The reason is that all of the scientists on the panel, and the international sciences, of course, they have to agree on absolutely everything to get published, okay? But more than that, and something that people might not understand, is that it is the first of its kind scientific panel, in as much as sitting on the panel are policymakers who are bureaucrats representing every single world government. So the IPCC assessment cannot be published until every world government, through its policymaker representative on the panel, has read line by line, discussed, and asked for changes and pushed for changes. So what we end up with is we end up with a document which has never ever had more certainty in the history of science, because we have a document that is a bottom line agreed document, whereby the scientists have to agree to everything. If somebody says, I think that temperature is actually a little lower, okay, and he's not going to shift, then it becomes lower. But all the world governments have acknowledged and approved the assessments. So nothing has been more certain than the IPCC, and yet we still have this, you're right, very, very active, dangerous climate change denial campaign, which is constant. It never lets up.
And these, the folks that do it are not just individual people. I mean, I think they that comes from the industry and itself, doesn't it? I mean, let's go to the media. Chapter 4, you really talk about the media. For example, the Commission on the Presidential Debate, which is, people think that's an official thing, but really, it's just a nonprofit, I guess, that's been funded by who knows, that decides what the debate's going to be, including excluding, as you mentioned, the third-party candidates, and apparently offering the questions or selecting the media hosts who will ask the questions. And of course, during the debates, as you mentioned, not one question on climate change. So the media itself really, is purchased for the most part by the fossil fuel industry.
Well, it is. I mean, that's a matter of fact, right? I mean, whenever you pick up a magazine or a paper or anything, a journal, you're going to open it and you're going to see a great big advert for, the latest big or bigger SUV, right? So that's a matter of fact. They're funded by advertisers, and the biggest advertisers are actually the fossil fuel automobile industry. But for years and years and years, up to 2009, it's very well known that under the influence of the fossil fuel industry, all the media played a very deceptive game. It was not informative, it was deceptive, in which whenever a expert science report came out, published by a particular scientist team, the media would find somebody to disagree and say that was wrong. And then they would publish what they called this balanced two sides of what they called a debate. There's never been any question, this is in the book, about the science of climate change. We can go back to the 1990 very first assessment of the IPCC, and it says the greenhouse gas effect is certain. If we increase emissions of greenhouse gases, that will increase the temperature. They said, we are certain of this, right? So there's never been any question. I suppose that's why they've been so aggressive. Now, I can easily distinguish between a critic who is a false critic in the campaign, right, to keep us burning fossil fuels, and other people who are legitimately confused. Because the what I might call the professional critics, they are nasty. If they're not very nasty, they use one of these totally made up arguments. There are, on the other hand, you know, a number of people. They will go in and ask some questions, and they can be critical. But those people, of course, are the victims of the intentional dangerous climate change denial, because there's still a huge legacy of confusion, which is still being driven by the what I would call the professional deniers. They have been tragically successful. In the United States, for example, there has been next to no improvement in the appreciation of the reality and the dangers of global climate change. There was an increase in the early 90s. People caught on pretty quickly, including the politicians. It was a really good time for people like myself. But then the corporate fossil fuel and investment machine really started biting in. And since then, there's been a slow decline. So we're at about status quo right now today than we were in the early 90s.
This is Progressive Spirit, progressivespirit.net. I'm speaking with Dr. Peter Carter about crimes against humanity. His book is Unprecedented Crime, Climate Science Denial and Game Changers for Survival. Stay with us. Progressive Spirit is produced every week. It couldn't happen without the financial support of my congregation, Southminster Presbyterian Church in Beaverton, Oregon. Southminster's website is www.southmin.org. Progressive Spirit is produced in the studios of KBOO in Portland, Oregon, for the Pacifica Radio Network, and PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, as well as podcast. Show KBOO some love, won't you? KBOO.fm, and click donate. You're listening to Progressive Spirit, progressivespirit.net. I'm speaking with Dr. Peter Carter. He, along with Elizabeth Woodworth, have co-written Unprecedented, Climate Science Denial and Game Changers for Survival. Okay, and our government itself, our politicians, I'm speaking actually of the United States, but we'll throw Canada in there too, are not doing enough in terms of actually listening to the people or engaging this in their own way. So in a sense, they are participants in this unprecedented crime.
Oh yeah, the governments, of course, are primarily responsible because, you know, the buck stops here, Truman. It does and tends in making the decisions. Number one, all the governments are subsidizing the fossil fuel industry. That's an evil crime if ever there was one. One of the pleasantries of being involved in this issue is, and this is over my lifetime actually, is the way in which the faith groups, the organized churches, have all made great strides towards their attitudes to our planet, such that for many years now, every single organized religion formally has stated that our Earth is sacred. That is very, very, very important. And the more that awareness gets out, the happier I will be, because we're looking at a system of economics and governance which is completely devoid of ethics and morality, right? By definition, okay, economics does not take account of ethics, right? Hasn't got a head, hasn't got a heart, is how I describe it. It just runs along being driven by computers. And if shale oil being fracked in West Texas now, which has been recently discovered, another size of Saudi Arabia, if that's going to make instant money on the stock market, that's where the money goes. Governments are primarily responsible because they keep this economics going. But the other main institution responsible, of course, is the banking and the investment industry, because they set the economics. They, you know, they're the public handlers that control the economics, which, of course, controls everything else. And so for decades, we've known, and people have written books on the perversity, right, in general, of our economics. The Stern Commission, Lord Stern, out of the UK, the UK government, 2006, wrote this brilliant economic expose, if you want. It was called The Economics of Climate Change, about why this is going on. And the commission explained that it is the biggest, worst, most far-reaching market failure ever. In other words, this is not supposed to be happening, even under free market economics. And he explained that the reason why the market is being allowed to fail, and here's the crime, is that external costs, externalities, the real costs of fossil fuels to our health, which is massive, and now increasing to our entire planet with increasing extreme weather events, these are externalized costs which, under the principles that governments have agreed with, and under the free market principles, have to be fully costed. Okay, that's how the system is supposed to work. They're not costed at all. They're called externalities, and as the Stern Commission said, they are thereby avoided. Thereby, the polluter is avoiding paying the costs for polluters, and this actually is not allowed, but it continues to happen. Even at the point of destroying the future and wrecking the entire planet, including the oceans, you know, the forests are dying now, and our agriculture is already stressed. You know, you can't overstate what this crime really is. Frankly, you know, we haven't really invented a word for how bad this monstrous event you know, that I record regularly with the science, and as I'm recording it, I know nothing is going to be done about this latest terrible situation that the scientists have just discovered, because particularly, yes, in the United States, the government is completely captured by the fossil fuel industry. That's abundantly clear. At least it is clear in the United States. Although the evidence is obviously strong in other countries as well. Australia is another one in which it's painfully, horribly obvious. And the consumer, so-called, is also captured, because we're called consumers, and we have billions of dollars being paid to persuade us to keep buying vehicles and things and other, you know, that are emitting fossil fuels all the time. But this could change on a dime, right? Two reasons it can change on a dime. The positive side, perhaps, of the global economy, you know, the economic beast, is that it is so sensitive, right, and so powerful, right, that if it got a strong message, and it did in 2008, 2009, before Copenhagen, the market started quick switching into renewables, because it was thought, oh, there is going to be an agreement for climate change, right? So you could see the market is very sensitive to everything, including climate change. The legal cases being brought against the fossil fuel corporations are very, very important in that respect. But governments, at the stroke of a pen, right, can stop all these subsidies, to fossil fuels. They amount to over $5 trillion every year, according to the IMF, and the IMF is the expert. There's a lot of good things happening. One of the best things happening is in your country, and that's the Our Children's Trust legal project, which is taking the United States government to court. The United States government, under both Obama and even more aggressively under Trump, threw everything they could at these teenagers and their young lawyer. The courts have judged against the government in every single case and have judged very favorably to the children of what they are going to face under global climate change. So the big court happens in October. Our Children's Trust, they're calling the case of the century. I would call it the case of all time. This is the case for humanity. They started doing this in 2011. Sadly, the case has got stronger and stronger and stronger because our whole situation has got worse and worse and worse. So their case is extremely strong. Look, atmospheric carbon dioxide is the highest it's been in 3 to 5 million years, probably the highest it's been in 15 million years. The World Meteorological Organization last year stated that it is increasing at a rate which is so rapid, it is at least 100 times faster than the normal increase in CO2 that goes along with getting us out of ice ages in a warming time. And here's where I'm very critical of the media, because none of the media carried this. The WMO used, and of course I know the research that backs it up, to say atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration has never, ever increased at the rate it is today. That's ever. So if you just take carbon dioxide alone, the existential threat is without doubt, and the monstrous crime is without doubt. And we were interested in reading the book because, you know, Western society is very much based on, you know, legalities and criminalities. You know, that's how our civilization operates, right? Many people have been saying and scientists explaining, you know, that civilization is under threat, you know, due to climate change, right? So we felt, well, this has to be a crime. So let's write the book and do some research, which is very interesting for me and Elizabeth, on the criminality aspects of this. So we're delighted about Our Children's Trust.
And the book is Unprecedented Crime, Climate Science Denial and Game Changers for Survival. Peter Carter and Elizabeth Woodworth are the authors. Peter Carter on Skype with me to talk about it. I want to go back to this Children's Trust lawsuit. James Hansen, I believe, started this, according to your book, on behalf of his granddaughter. Started in 2011. So now what happens? Let's say the good news. Let's say the children's lawsuit wins. What happens?
That's a heck of a question. There's a precedent because and Our Children's Trust was launched in Washington State, and they won. And the court, you know, told the government, you've got to do better. The government didn't really change very much. That's a precedent which is not comforting. There was a win in Holland. That government is making good efforts, but they're not good efforts enough. So as I understand it, this is based on the public trust doctrine. So Our Children's Trust activities, and they're happening around the world, and probably at least half the states in the United States, is based on very, very long-standing aspect of our Western law, which is called the public trust doctrine. And in Holland, I think they're going to an appeal to appeal to the courts that the government has to do better.
And so what could happen though?
Something that could happen. The pleading from Our Children's Trust against the United States government was so strong, right? So many claims and requests of the court. That frankly, I thought it was too much. I thought the courts would not actually go for it. Well, luckily, I couldn't have been more wrong, because the judgments were very much in favor. There was nothing exceptional at all. So the big thing, as you'll guess then, that our Children's Trust is demanding that the government does is stop subsidizing fossil fuels. Once a government stops subsidizing fossil fuels, our children have a chance. The future has a chance. You know, it is looking very, very grim. But on the other hand, and I tell people, you know, people say, well, why are you still working on this? Isn't it a bit of a downer? And I said, well, you know, I mean, it's you could call it the greatest human adventure that there's ever been. But I say, I'm well aware from history that human beings, when they get together on a common cause, can really, really make miracles happen.
So we can change things around. So, for example, you talk in your book, because I want to talk about this, because this is what people talk to me all the time. They say, yeah. What can we do? What can we do? What can we do? And yeah. What you're saying in this is Mission Earth. In other words, this is use from history, World War II, Manhattan Project, right. Whatever it is, get together, bang pots and pans. So this one thing about the children's court case, whatever it is, you take it and you publicize it and you talk about it and you talk about it again and again. And with the goal.
That's right. You do. Yes, you do.
Right. And like myself, you talk about spirituality. My church is I'm a minister, Presbyterian minister. And so we're going at it again. We've done it for three general assemblies to try to get our pension plan and our Presbyterian Foundation to divest from fossil fuels.
Wonderful.
And it's so far, but it's coming up that we're going to do it and try it again in June. Folks are advocates. So far it loses, and it loses because of the actual people within those institutions themselves.
Yeah.
it becomes a moral problem. So the more it seems to me, what I'm hearing you say as I read your book is that every different angle people can take to publicize, to get out the word, to make a court case and to publicize the court case, with the idea being that if we actually were able to stop the subsidies, that the market itself would ultimately go for renewables.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's happening. Last year was another record year for investments in clean, renewable energy. The trouble is, of course, that huge, insane investments, right, are being made in, more pipelines, you know, more fracking for oil and more fracking for gas. Okay, we have to stop that because we have to get the science dictates that we get to near zero emissions, which is this complete switch off all fossil fuels and on to clean energy. We are facing the choice of the worst possible futures and the very best possible futures. And I like to talk about the best possible futures because the golden age for humanity under only basically solar energy, you and I can't imagine how great it could be, right? Because this energy lasts forever. It's everlasting. This energy really is unlimited. I mean, presumably there's some kind of scientific limit, but in terms of our civilization, it's unlimited. Things are so bad now that we have to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. That's how bad things are. All the scientists are agreed on that, right? There's a choice between an absolutely horrible idea, which is to burn biomass, burn wood and trees and stuff, and the delusion of capturing the carbon and burying it. Well, that's a horrible idea. The other choice is called direct air capture, and that we know we can do because we have that past a prototype. The criticism of this is funny. The criticism of direct air capture is that it would require a heck of a lot of energy. No problem. We have absolutely unlimited potential of renewable energy to do that. We're on a knife edge right now. I mean, we really, really are. But we can still do it. Individuals can actually do a lot. There is too much complacency. You know, people should not be put off just because this is the biggest threat our species has ever faced historically. We human beings absolutely excel at facing impossible challenges and prevailing. So we should remember, you know, what we're made of, and everybody should get involved. And particularly, the solid foundation of our civilization, which is our churches. It's a place for community to get involved, people to understand what they can do. The biggest, easiest, best for the planet and for the individual, right, is to get off meat, right? The methane. Meat is the methane greenhouse gas problem. So get off meat, which I did very slowly. And also get off fish as well, because of what's happening to the oceans. A plant-based, fruit-based diet is the healthiest diet there is. If everybody in the world did that, and it's happening, by the way, it's certainly happening in the States. Veganism in the States is literally taking off. Unfortunately, we've exported, very bad, unhealthy, meat-based heavy diet, you know, to Asia. So people in China, you know, are going that route, which is an absolute tragedy.
Well, you mentioned that. So talking about, so there are some lifestyle changes. I think one of the things that people might expect is that, well, we can switch to renewable energies, but everything will be the same. All of our happy motoring and all of this kind of thing and everything we eat. But that isn't. Yeah. We have to take seriously the fact that life changes, but it doesn't have to be miserable. I mean, it's really, some cases I'm thinking, as I read your book, I'm thinking we suffer in some cases from a lack of imagination in terms of what if we put our energy and our money and our investment that we put in fossil fuels towards renewables, towards an amazing future of what could be. We certainly have the brain power globally and the imagination. Once we're let loose of the prison of the fossil fuel thing to really imagine a future that could be quite amazing.
My very smart wife is listening to you, and she should be smiling because she said, you know, One of the things is that this is a failure of human imagination. And she says that's completely extraordinary because that's one of our great gifts. So when you say failure of imagination, yeah, absolutely. It absolutely totally is. It seems that people fear that, you know, and I've done a lot of research and a lot of wrestling with this over the years, right? You know, we've been accused of, you know, sending humanity back to the Stone Age. Well, if we don't act on an emergency basis within the next few years, okay, we literally actually will be back in the Stone Age, if not worse.
Right.
But our future, our destiny, right, with the technologies that are definitely proven, definitely out there, definitely operating, right, is the greatest future that humanity could have ever imagined, right? So we're not just fighting to rescue the future. We're fighting to produce a future of a great and glorious human destiny. You know, and that's where the failure of imagination comes in, because it seems we're not seeing that. On cars, you know, in the 1980s, when we had gasoline rationing in the United States, you know, and things happened very, very quickly. The automobile industry turned on a dime. But there were all kinds of brilliant ideas which were produced in some detail for more efficient, less fossil fuel consuming modes of moving people, right? Well, we can now see that the entire automobile fleet can be electrified. We have to rebuild the world for non-combustion energy. I just hate it when people say, well, what about how much it's going to cost us? Rebuilding the world for non-combustion energy, obviously, is the biggest boost to the world economy and national economies that there's ever been.
It might make things more just for everyone.
Oh, it will. It will. It will. That's a wonderful thing because, you know, when you look at wars, and of course in our book, one of the things that we say has to happen, there are some prerequisites that has to happen. We have to give up war, right? We have to convert the war machine, right? And all these incredible resources and skills and people and science and technology and organizations, we have to convert our defense forces into the defense of the future. Right. And there's a massive resource. I mean, worldwide, good God, we're into $1 trillion a year again. You know? $1 trillion a year being absolutely wasted for nothing, right? We could do a lot on climate change and ocean acidification with $1 trillion a year. There's $5 trillion of fossil fuel subsidies. I mean, you know, we're potentially looking at an accessibility of almost $10 trillion a year.
And what we have to do, Peter Carter, Unprecedented Crime is his book, Climate Science Denial and Game Changers for Survival. Part of the thing we need to do is recognize the criminals in high places.
And we do.
And acknowledging that and saying this is really a revolution, a nonviolent revolution, but nonetheless,
right.
we have to take our planet back.
Yeah, we do.
Can you give us a last word about what you'd like to say?
Yeah, my last message would be go vegan. And after a little while, you're going to like it and you're going to help the planet a whole lot. But also get your banker or whoever you use to look into what your investments are, no matter how small, and tell that person to get everything that's involved in fossil fuels out. And to start putting as much as you can into renewable energy. In other words, make good money. Stop making bad money. Make good money for yourself, and you'll go a long way to securing a future for our kids. If we can secure a future, then we can get to the golden future in time.
Progressive Spirit is heard every week. On Progressive Spirit, you hear interviews with cutting-edge scholars, authors, and activists who have something to say about social justice, human flourishing, and things that matter. Progressive Spirit is formatted for radio and is distributed every week through the Pacifica Radio Network and PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Thanks to the following stations for carrying Progressive Spirit every week: WETS, Johnson City, Tennessee; WEHC, Emory, Virginia; WPVM, Asheville, North Carolina; Kutztown University Radio, Kutztown, Pennsylvania; KCEI, Taos, New Mexico; KACR, Alameda, California; WDRT, Viroqua, Wisconsin; KSOW, Cottage Grove, Oregon; KYAQ, Newport, Oregon; KBOG, Bandon, Oregon; KZ88, Kabul, Missouri; and 3A Oldies 91.9 in Epsom, New Hampshire. You can download Progressive Spirit for free on your favorite podcast app. The website is progressivespirit.net. Follow on Facebook and Twitter. Progressive Spirit is produced in the studios of KBOO in Portland, Oregon. I'm John Schuck. Be well.